This is the Spencer Wilson Show.
Travis Ishikawa hits one in the right. The Giants win the pennant.
Trying to fight up a shot. Block, loose ball, 1 second, and Nevada wins.
Oh! Oh!
This is going to be a tough play. Bryant, the Cubs win the World Series. Bryant makes the play. It's over. And the Cubs have finally won it all.
Balotelli.
Here's your host, Spencer Wilson.
Good afternoon, Reno. Welcome inside ESPN Studios. This is the Spencer Wilson Show. I'm your host, Spencer Wilson. Sean Cloud on the board.
How's everyone doing?
We have Haley here as well.
Hello.
Very energetic.
Yeah, very energetic.
Very
try
energetic
again.
There.
I've been
Hello.
Up since 4:30 a.m., okay, guys?
That's fair. I can confirm that. She has been up since 4:30 in the morning, so we'll give her a pass there. Well, a nice, very nice day outside. A little hot, little
smoky.
Burning out there, a little smoky, yes. I did get an air quality alert earlier. I don't know if that's still in effect or not,
it
but
is.
I'll throw that out there right now. So kind of limit your time outside, watch your kids, your pets, all that stuff, kind of keep them out of the smoke. You know who? Oh, actually, never mind. I was gonna make a joke, but that's I quickly thought better of it.
Let's not.
Yeah, no. I'll tell you guys why during the break. But that's yeah. No, I'm very happy. I just caught myself. The Reno Aces have just wrapped up a series with no segue at all against the New Orleans Baby Cakes. They played a 3-game series. They went 1-2 in that series, and really based on how the first two games went, just thankful that they got a win in that series. I don't want to call it disappointing because honestly, it's never easy, especially as a player. I mean, it's easy for us with the headphones and behind the mics to sit back and be like, oh, what are they doing? But you know, there's just got to be true frustration going through that locker room because we've seen spotty at times just how good this team can be. So when they have two games like that, you know, it's just they're pulling their hair out wondering why these games are going the way they are. And that first game, I mean, the one hit, that's just tough to get one hit,
well,
one run.
Well, in the
run.
First two games in general, they only got one run.
Yeah, and I think seven, eight hits between the
if
two
that.
Games. I
if
mean, they
that.
Didn't even get to double digits in hits. And that one hit, was the third time in franchise history they had just been held to one hit. The first time was all the way back in August of 2012 against Tacoma, and actually in Tacoma. Hector Noesi tossed 7 2/3 and struck out 11 aces that night. And the second time was earlier this year on April 15th when they played the Grizzlies. They lost 5-1. Kent Emmanuel allowed one hit in 6 innings and added 3 strikeouts to his resume. And really, I feel like in losses like that, when there's one hit or run, or just like 2 or 3 hits, it's you just gotta kind of tip your hat to the other pitcher.
Yeah,
because,
he did great.
Yeah, they're not hitting well, but at the same time, it's not like guys are going out there. It's not slow pitch.
No,
these guys are out there whipping it at them, and it's it's tough to hit that. But at the same time, we've seen how they can hit pitchers.
Yeah, and it really was proven on the third game. That's for sure. I mean, they came out of the gates on the third game. Being like, you know, we only got one hit, one run.
Yeah.
We need to step it up and get some points in here. And that's what they did. But at the same time, it is the third game. So New Orleans had already won the series. And in my mind, if you already win the series, you're not going to try that hard on the last day. There's no need.
Yeah.
But
and go ahead.
No, go ahead.
And just a tip of the cap to Yadimaro Vargas, because although he wasn't in the lineup last night, I think that doesn't actually affect a hitting streak, does it? Or is it over?
No, I don't think it does.
Because I think you have to actually play in a game and not get a hit for it to actually end the streak. If they just give you a night off, at least I hope that's not the case. Because it's one of the longest streaks in history. It's 24 games is where it's currently at if it's still going.
I believe it is. I think you have to play in a game for that to take effect.
Because he wasn't in the starting lineups last night and didn't get a pinch hit appearance, so he was getting a night off. And well-deserved. I mean, he's been playing really well. This really is the only kind of silver lining in this series with New Orleans was Vargas and how he was playing and how he was getting to hit. And then the 8-0 loss in that second game, which was kind of just like insult to injury. They get one run and one hit the night before, and they come out and then get shut out in the following game. And again, that was their third one-hit game. This is the third time this season they've been shut out. And it's tough when that happens again. They didn't score the last time was in June against Memphis. They're one of the only two teams to not have shut someone out. So the only team to not be on a winning end of a shutout, the only other team that's also in that position is Round Rock. Ironically, the team they play next.
Yeah.
So we'll see if maybe they can get a shutout here. But tough to come off a one-hit game like that, because you're thinking, okay, they're going to get that energy level up. They're going to go out there and be a little more aggressive, and then to get shut out. And they had guys in scoring position, too. Not that they haven't had that.
They've had that the whole season.
Yeah, but it's just, again, I feel like we've had this conversation every week. They just can't seem to figure out how to consistently get guys in off base.
Well, here's my thought. So say there's someone on first and third, for example, or second and third, for example, two people in scoring position, zero outs. Then you bring up a batter. What's your first thought? What do you want to do? I'd want to bunt it and bring a runner in.
Advance the runner, yeah.
You rarely see the Aces bunt anything to get a runner in. If anything, it's to get someone up to second to get into scoring position. But when they're in third, have that guy break, bunt the ball down. Yeah, the guy at first is probably be out, but you still get a run from that.
And that's what I found kind of entertaining about when this new extra inning rule was announced, how they're going to start with the guy on second.
Right.
And everyone kind of blew up like, oh, it's going to be over in an inning. What fun is that? Well, again, I said earlier, these guys aren't – it's not slow pitch. The pitchers aren't just going to lay a ball. All right, here's your sacrifice bunt. All right, here's your sacrifice fly. Night, guys. Like, that's not how it's going to go. It's right. Not just walk up and do this. They're going to have to hit a pitch. So, again, like you said, they're just not very – they haven't been solid at moving guys over. They're still just trying to swing for the fences when really just get a guy over and try and get him in.
Yeah, this isn't the home run derby yet. You know, or yet. Anymore. You know, we're not going up every hitter trying to get an 800 average, you know, or anything like that. It's about getting the runner in and doing it, you know, when they're in position. If you have a guy on third with no outs and then all of a sudden you have three outs, what did you do wrong? Okay, you probably didn't do any offense correctly in that situation. I'm just going to hit for the skies and hope that it goes. Half of them, you know, get caught in the left field. That's just how it's been.
Yeah, no,
making
it's
making me angry now.
It's fine. Breathe, Sean. Breathe a little bit. But another, again, we kind of talked about Vargas being the silver lining. There was another fun moment last night in the Aces win. Not a whole lot of grand slams have been hit in Aces history. In fact, going into last night, there had been 43 in Aces history in the 10 years that's happened. But this season, only once before. And last night, who was it?
Tomas.
Yasmani Tomas was able to do this.
One ball and two strikes. The pitch. Swinging a high drive into deep right field. Going back is J.B. Shuck. He turns. He looks. And it is gone. A pinch hit grand slam for Yasmani Tomas. And it shoots the Aces back in front. They've got a sick lead.
And kind of a cool thing, the other home run or the other grand slam that was hit earlier this year was actually a month ago today, June 27th.
Wow.
It was hit against Salt Lake. Kevin Crone hit that one. Big surprise,
that.
Yeah. Crone just been a monster bat all season. But like I said, 44th grand slam in Aces history. I said last year, five were hit by Christian Walker, Oswaldo Arcia, Carlos Rivero, Yadimaro Vargas, and Zach Borenstein all hit grand slams last year. And fun little fact here, Ed Easley, the only other Aces player to hit a pinch hit grand slam.
That was my next question, was how many pinch hit grand slams?
Only one other one. He did it on June 18th in 2013 against Fresno. So that's 1,864 days apart between pinch hit grand slams.
Wow.
So that's pretty awesome. Hats off again there to Yasmani Tomas. Again, when you have those kind of series, just look for the little kind of silver linings. Vargas is hitting streak. You got a win, and you got a fun grand slam out of it as well.
Right.
You lost the series, but you get those little tidbits out of it, which is fun. Speaking of sports here in Reno, when we come back from the break, we're going to have 1868 PR guy. Our PR manager, I don't want to say PR guy, that's a little disheartening there, but PR manager. Aldo Amato will be here in studio with us to talk about the Reno 1868 FC and this just incredible unbeaten streak they've been going on. That's coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show here on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Spencer Wilson Show.
Welcome back inside the studio. I am joined now by Reno 1868 FC PR and digital media manager, Mr. Aldo Amato. Aldo, how you doing, man?
Good. Thanks for having me.
How you feeling with the streak and everything going right now? I bet you're on cloud
nine.
Man,
we're buzzing. This is a dream Perez. So, I mean, considering how the season started, where we are now, we're buzzing. We're buzzing.
Let's talk about that. Let's just get right out of the gate. This team is only in its second year, which is amazing enough to see the following and the passion from this city. But also just to have this kind of an unbeaten streak already, what's it mean for the club to have this kind of presence in its second year?
I mean, if you look at last season and this season, it's almost like a direct parallel. I mean, again, like we started off rough last year, and then we ended up setting the record for most goals in the United States and have the Golden Boot winner. So just to have this passion again like we had last year, I mean, it's a dream come true. And having the city, the wonderful city, and our fans behind us and rallying us the whole way, I mean, it means so much to this club, and we're just looking to keep it going, keep it rolling.
We talked a little bit, you just mentioned it actually, that little bit of a slow start coming out of the gate, but once this Ian Russell coached offense really takes off, it's amazing to see what they can do. He has them right now in top five in both shots with 288 and goals with 32. So what is it about that offense when it gets going that just leaves people in the dust?
You know, Spencer, this is a product built for the American soccer fan. He's all about scoring, fast-paced. Soccer's relatively new to the United States still. And let's be honest, we love our home runs. We love our slam dunks. We love our three-point shots. We love just exciting, quick points. That's what Ian Russell's offense is built around. Quick, fast-paced, one-touch soccer, or football. one-touch soccer. And when fans come to the match, they get an exciting product that produces a ton of goals. Like I said, we produced the most in America last year, both North and South America, as far as total season goals. And again, we've picked up the pace this year. And so I think what you see from an Ian Russell offense is a lot of speed and a lot of just attack from the back to the front. Our defenders love to attack too. So everybody's looking to score.
And one player that's really starting to thrive in that system is Brian Brown. He's kind of thrived all year, but he's leading the team with 8 goals, and he's doing that most of the part coming off the bench. So what does that say about the depth of this team, really, to have that kind of presence coming off the bench, and also for Brian to bring that kind of energy in such a kind of condensed amount of time?
Yeah, I think you hit on that depth. You know, the depth this year is much greater than we had last year. Last year we were a new team. We had a bunch of key figures, but we couldn't really afford to lose a Dane Kelly or Matt LaGrassa. I mean, we were thin, and this year we have a lot of depth. Key to this run, it's keeping us healthy, and guys like Brian Brown, who really learned a lot from Dane Kelly, our leading scorer last year and the MVP, he's really taken that role and just solidified it as our top scorer and our top playmaker. Right now, his form is incredible. He scored in our friendly against Morelia as well, and that's a top Mexican club. So Brian Brown's form right now is incredible, and he attributes a lot of that to his friendship and mentorship from Dane Kelly.
When you have this kind of a streak going, and then you do have a friendly like that against Morelia, what's kind of the takeaway that you're looking to get from a friendly, kind of taking a break from league play?
Yeah, I mean, it can help, it can hurt you, but I think in our case it helped a lot, especially scoring 2 goals against Morelia, and we were really in there for a while. You know, it's a shame that we had that weather delay, but we were in that match for a while and hanging with a top Mexican club, and I think that just added to our confidence. And yeah, we had a week off from league play, but I think just hanging in there with a top Mexican club, I think our confidence is just sky high right now. I think the team feels like they could play with anybody, and that can only help your run.
Yeah, absolutely. Here with Aldo Amato, PR and digital media manager for the 1868 FC. Let's also talk a little bit about defense as well. JT Marcinkowski has been really solid back in net. He's got 4 clean sheets so far this year. What's been the biggest improvement from him that you've seen from the beginning of the season to now?
So, I mean, he's fresh, completely fresh to pro soccer, coming off. He graduated from Georgetown, and, you know, he's one of the top prospects in the United States. He played on the U-20s and the World Cup for the United States. So he had a lot of upside, and I think everybody was looking to see that upside. At the beginning of the season, he was just getting his feet wet, but every single match, he has just improved. If you look at some of his saves, they're incredible. He's extremely athletic. He makes a ton of acrobatic saves, and he is just one that we need in a goal in the USL. USL, you get a lot of shots on goal, and he is just the perfect prototype for in the mold for USL goalkeeper. And he just played against Manchester United this weekend in their friendly for San Jose, so, and kept a clean sheet. So he has just added just what we need back there as an extra defender and a goalkeeper.
And not only do you have him being solid in goal, but you have that back line that's just almost really unbeatable, or not unbeatable, but unable to really get rattled.
Mm-hmm.
Because you guys only have 22 goals conceded this year. I think Phoenix is 19. I think that's the lowest number. Mm-hmm. So you guys are right in at that, right at that mark. And when you said everyone's attacking in this offense, so how is it they still manage to not really get rattled, not really get beaten all that much?
So I think you've seen a couple new additions to the back line. One of them being our captain, Zach Carroll. He started, his first start was actually against Portland, which started the streak, and he's undefeated as a player right now. So he's been a huge instrumental part. He's a big body, 6'4", just a big guy back there to just really stop the aerial threats. Thomas Janjigian, last year, he didn't really see much playing time. This year, during the streak, he's been one of our top defenders. It's incredible the development you see from last year to this year, especially on that defensive side. So when you have two big bodies back there that are great with their feet, with Zach Carroll and Thomas Janjigian, that allows guys like Brent Richards, our wing back, to sort of attack. And then a name that people need to know is Duke Lacroix. He is extremely fast off the left flank, and he's been one of our top playmakers from the defensive end.
Again, just it seems like all-around team effort through this entire streak. And when you have one of these streaks, it's all about the next game and what comes with it. You guys will have your next game this Saturday at home against St. Louis FC. So what is it? What's the big key just to making sure this streak continues against them?
I think it just goes back to keeping the Ian Russell philosophy of just attack, attack, attack. We create a ton of chances. We're one of the top chance creators in the league. So if we continue to convert those chances, I think just see this momentum keep going. That was, I think, the problem at the beginning of the season was the chances were being created. We just weren't converting them as much. Now you have Brian Brown finishing. You have Jerry Van Avek. You have now you see more and more guys on our team with their goal tally continue to creep up week after week. I think if we continue to finish those chances and hold solid defensively in the back, I think we can hang with anybody in this league.
I would agree with that. Well, all the best to you, Aldo. I appreciate you coming and talking to us. We're going to be pulling for you and rooting for you and keep an eye on that streak and see how far we can get it up there.
Perfect. Thanks for having me on.
Big thank you to Aldo Amato for coming in and talking to us and just spending some time, especially nowadays when you have a team like this that's in a streak that they're in. It just seems like every little thing you do could somehow happen. Like, you could just be in your kitchen making a sandwich, but you feel like if you don't put the pastrami down right, your team's going to lose the next game. Like, it just feels weird.
Or you're that guy that just doesn't clean his undergarments.
Yeah, right. What? You're going to wear the same pair of underwear.
You've never heard of that?
Oh, there have been people. Oh, yeah. Well, off, very, very, you know, Sean's very superstitious, and he's
what you're talking about. Okay.
Oh, yeah. No, not just like not doing
not
it,
in
not
general,
to do it.
But just like,
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just so tired, and you're like, you place the pastrami down weird, and I'm like, is he that important that he's the pastrami in the sandwich? I'm so tired.
Pastrami can be pretty important there. Haley. Don't underestimate pastrami. But like we said, they're in a 16 match now, unbeaten streak, I think is what they're up to. Their next game will be here in Reno tomorrow night as they host St. Louis FC. Reno, we touched on these during the interview, but just to kind of reiterate, 32 goals this year for Reno, that is tied for fifth in all of the USL. St. Louis is down at 23rd with 21 goals right now. And we've seen, again, that offense of the Reno 1868, when they pick up, it's unbelievable to watch. And regardless of the outcome that they had against Maracas Morelia from Liga MX.
You did better that time.
I did better with it, you guys. I'm getting there. It's getting better.
Golf clap.
Thank you. Yes. Just a golf clap?
Yeah.
Nothing a little harder than that?
It's radio. I don't want to be too loud.
Oh, that's fair. But they lost 4-2 in that game. It was a friendly, so it doesn't affect the streak at all. But even with that, that's top-level talent coming from Mexico, and they were able to get two goals pushed across, and that in itself is something to be very proud of.
Right.
And there was an announcement coming down that next year, Reno 1868 FC will host their major league affiliate, San Jose Earthquake, here at Greater Nevada Field. Both clubs will meet on February 9th of next year with kickoff scheduled at 1 p.m. overall, this is going to be the third friendly between the two clubs, both meetings as recently as February 10th of this year at the Avaya Center down in San Jose. They won that match 4-0. Remember, it's nil, not nothing when you're talking about soccer.
Nil.
You got to say nil if someone doesn't score a goal. Yeah. That's official soccer term is nil if someone doesn't score a goal. So 4-0 was that score. Yeah. Learn something new every day.
Yeah.
They joined forces again, obviously, back in 2017, and Reno has seen four of its players get signed to San Jose, including a Sparks native, Kevin Partida. I hope I pronounced his name right. Who joined San Jose. I never do. But I always keep out hope that I do. He went up and joined San Jose on loan in June, and both players from both squads have helped contribute, obviously, to this team's success, not only this season but last season as well. It's hard to imagine. I always get lost in the fact that it's only the second season of
soccer. Yeah, they don't look like a second-season team. They look like a veteran team that's been together for years.
They feel like they've been here as long as the Aces, honestly. Yeah. I mean, with the support and just the way they've really taken to this city and to that stadium at Greater Nevada Field, it's been a lot of fun. And if you want to go see that game, Sean, we got something for the people.
We got another pair of tickets to go see the 1868's FC take on St. Louis FC at the Greater Nevada Field tomorrow, July 28th. So if you win, you have to pick them up today by 5:30.
Yes, be here in studio by 5:30 to get them. And, of course, that goes to caller number 9 at 775-333-0945. When we come back, we're talking football and basketball. This is the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Spencer Wilson Show.
All righty. Well, it's late July, believe it or not. I don't know if you can believe the time has flown by this fast. It always feels like the beginning and end of the year take forever. Like January, February goes by forever, then November, December, and then it feels like from April to about October, just gone.
Yeah.
Like that. Like it's already almost August.
Yeah, school's about to start.
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels really
sad,
weird for
sad
me.
Sad individuals, man.
Yeah. I feel bad for all of you.
It feels really weird for me to like not be preparing to go back to school right now.
Yeah, because you just graduated.
Yeah, and so that's really weird
fresh
to be like,
out.
Yeah, all my friends are like, oh, I'm going back to Cedar, as I went to school in Cedar City, Utah, and I'm just like, well, I'm just staying here now. So
I get to stay where there's fires all around us. Yeah. At any point, we could be lit up as well.
All we see is smoke. Oh, that's right. I'll tell you guys the joke I'm not going to tell. I was going to tell you last commercial break. I'll tell you next commercial
break.
Okay,
we'll try to remind you.
I don't want to talk about it at all in the air. It's not like
bad.
Never mind. Yeah, it's not like bad. It's just that due to current situations, it probably would have been a little distasteful.
Maybe you check
He's
out his Twitter page.
He's talking about the Avatar. The Fire Nation has attacked Nevada. Moving on.
Okay.
Firebenders are controlling everything.
But like I said, it's almost July, which means once it's almost August. When once August rolls around, there's one thought that goes through pretty much every sports fan's beating heart and mind. That's football season.
Football!
Yes. One of those fans is Sean, who pretty much lives and breathes. Honestly, from about mid-February to mid-August, Sean just kind of wanders through the streets of Reno.
He doesn't know
what to do.
The past week, I've already done a few mock drafts and stuff, so I'm just trying to feel out the
fantasy
football.
Is it 5 or 6 leagues that you join usually?
No, last year it was 10.
Last year it was 10.
And I won 7
leagues,
of them.
And you won 7 of them.
The other 3, I was in dead last.
I don't know. Like,
disappointing.
So one extreme or the other, really, yeah. But obviously with football season rolling around, still contracts getting paid and signed and all this stuff, and some offensive linemen just got paid. The Tennessee Titans have signed left tackle Taylor Lewin to a 5-year, $80 million deal.
I want that.
$50 million of which is guaranteed, making him the richest in terms of average annual salary for an offensive lineman. $50 million guaranteed. Just guaranteed.
I'll take the beating for that.
That's unbelievable, man. And that's interesting that we see that it's because you usually don't see how much money is guaranteed in a football contract, usually because there's not a whole lot of money that is guaranteed. But that's been kind of the big issue between football players and owners because the NBA contracts keep coming up like, oh, they have guaranteed money. That's what we want. We want to guarantee the fact that we're going to get paid. And now all of a sudden you see that Tennessee's offering this guy $50 million guaranteed money. And that's for an offensive lineman. I think that's interesting because obviously a quarterback is going to get a lot of the attention on a football field. But to keep your quarterback successful, you need a good offensive line. So I think it's a little odd that you don't see a lot of these guys getting more contracts like this.
Well, I mean, Todd Gurley just signed a big contract, too.
Which Le'Veon Bell is somewhere punching a hole in a wall for that reason.
He's sitting there like, you know, I'm better.
Yeah. Can I get some money here, please? But that's true. You see a lot of, obviously, the quarterbacks, the wide receivers, the running backs, Cam Chancellor on defense, another guy that's holding out right now for some money. And seeing, obviously, just this, the money that's now flowing into some of these linemen. Because Jake Matthews and Atlanta also agreed on a five-year extension worth $75 million, which makes him the third highest-paid OL in terms of average annual salary. So, again, and I believe I read somewhere the guy in between them, I can't remember his name right now, but he is on a contract that currently offers, I think it's like $16.5 million. So you got 1 in 3 getting paid just levels more than the guy in second. But these are the kind of contracts that you're going to see more now in football. Guys that demand money that is going to be guaranteed to them. And we've seen two of them now with Matthews and Taylor that it's not impossible for offensive linemen to get paid nicely in the world of football.
It really isn't.
And we talked about how important the quarterback is, how important the offensive line is. As managers and as owners, you have to start to kind of put those positions into priority. And obviously, quarterback's going to be up at top at the priority. But I think after that, if you're going to think about paying your wide receivers and your running backs, your offensive linemen also have to be in there. You have to have two or three guys on that line that are going to get paid enough to want to lead that unit out there. Because that's not a glamorous job. I mean, if you're on the offensive or defensive line, it's dirty, it's physical, it's rough, and it's that way 16 games every single play. So you could imagine them wanting to get that kind of money. And I saw an interesting story come out of Philadelphia as well. Offensive lineman Chance Warmack becomes the first NFL player to collect money from a loss of value policy. When I saw this, I immediately was like, what in the world is that? Because right off the bat, just the title of it makes me feel bad, like loss of value. That hurts a lot as a player. But basically what it is in your contract, let's say I'm a player right now, I'm playing for San Francisco, and my current contract just ended last year. In that contract, I had some kind of, I don't know, there's an article in the contract that says, okay, the next contract you get, if you're getting paid less than what you're getting paid on this contract, then you will get some kind of payment in return.
He took out an insurance policy that basically stated that if he made less than $20 million,
right,
then he'd get paid out from that.
And he did. Hmm. He did not make $20 million on his newest contract, nope. So I think he's going to get a $3 million payout because of that.
Exactly.
So he's the first player to do that, and you see it a lot now in college players. Because USC's Marquise Lee, Michigan's Jake Butt, Oregon's Ife Ekpre Olamu, they get these insurances, they get these policies as they're coming out of college. So if they get an injury and their draft stock is hurt, which the three men I just mentioned is exactly what happened to them, then they're not going to miss out on money to help them kind of stay comfortable and stay relatively good financially as they heal up and get back to playing condition. And I just think it's interesting that you haven't heard about that. I mean, he's the first NFL player to get that. And honestly, I can't really remember hearing about that in any of the other major sports.
Nope.
I don't remember hearing a basketball player or hockey or baseball or anybody getting a loss of value payout like that.
But it is smart.
Like, it is.
I've never heard of it before, and now I'm thinking about it. It's like, You can literally, like, cheat the system here, guys.
pretty much you can. I mean, you can basically say, all right, I think that this is what I'm worth, and once I'm healthy, I'm going to be worth this. But if you don't want to pay me now, that's okay. I'll take a little bit of money on the side here. And you just wonder why that's not in every player's contract.
Right.
Like, why wouldn't every player say, okay, if you're not going to pay me as much as this, then at least give me a little bit more here.
Well, see, and that's why I think that it's not in their contract. I think it's more or less an insurance policy that they took out potentially with, like, an insurance company that's based around the NFL or something. Because it doesn't necessarily say that it's in his contract.
No, it's not in his contract. Well, I'm sorry. I should have phrased that better. Why wouldn't an owner or a team put that in a contract? Oh, okay. So that way you can kind of control how much you can pay this guy.
Exactly.
Because if they don't have $3 million to really spend, or if they wanted to take that $3 million and put it somewhere else, well, now you have no choice but to give it to him. Mm-hmm. So why wouldn't you put something in that contract that says, okay, if we can't give you this much money, we'll still give you this little bit on the side, right, and have a little bit of control of that, right, instead of just letting him come in and be like, all right, hey, you owe me $3 million. See ya.
Oh, by the way, I retire.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But that's interesting. I hadn't heard of that before. It's the first time I've seen anything like this happen. And I just thought it's interesting to hear a player make a little bit of money after not getting as much as he was just getting. It just seems smart.
And it also seems lazy. It's just like, okay, so basically this guy does not want to work when he's done. That's what he's stating right there. When he's done with the NFL, he does not want to work. Thanks. Like, we all have to work for you, man. Like, go out and work. But if you're worth that amount of money, like if you were truly worth that amount of money, then they would have paid you that. But clearly you're not worth that amount of money, so they didn't pay you that.
That's true.
Just the way I see it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess it always comes down to that ego check.
Exactly.
Like, how big of a deal are you going to make out of this, and how willing would you be just to kind of walk away with a little less money and still be on a team that's a defending Super Bowl champion and arguably going to make a very good run at it again this year to repeat?
Right, and the biggest story you could look at is, like, Aaron Rodgers. He hasn't been signed for a new contract in, you know, God knows how long, but yeah, he even agrees himself. He's like, I'm not at that level. You know, his value, he sees the value because now he has a fully reconstructed arm, but how well is that going to play for him in this next year? You know, reconstructed arms never really do well once they're reconstructed, so you got to take that into account. He's not going to be able to throw those bombs from one side of the field diagonal all the way over, yeah, to the other Rodgers on the team, you know? So you're not going to see that as much, but he understands it. So I guess these younger players, or these not so much veteran players, need to understand that it's not just the value of you, it's the value of the team. So if you're worth $20 million, they're going to pay you $20 million.
Right.
But if you're not worth $20 million, and you take out an insurance policy saying, well, I think I'm worth $20 million, to me that's a little bit, you know, like, you're not worth it. No one thinks you're worth it. No one else is sitting here like, oh, yeah, I'm going to pay you $20 million to put you on my team.
Right.
No one's doing that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm just kind of confused because I didn't realize that you could take out an insurance policy on money or, like, your paycheck or something.
I'm pretty sure you can take an insurance policy out on anything. Like, I can insure my left arm if I wanted to.
I know J-Lo, well, maybe it's not a fact, but I've heard that J-Lo has her butt insured.
I'd insure that butt. I'd make sure that it's taken care of until it's no longer needed.
Well, if it's an insurance policy, too, that means he has to pay into it, right?
I would imagine.
And so
he has
to pay into it to be like, oh, well, maybe I'm not going to get, so I don't know.
And again, that ego factor.
Yeah.
Can you check your ego enough to not put yourself in this kind of a situation? And seeing a lot of young players do this, I'm torn between smart and ego. Because I think it is a smart decision to put a policy on yourself to make sure that you're comfortable financially, but also wait until you show us how good you are at the NFL level before you start being like, oh, I'm worth this much, I know it.
Right.
Because you could get out there and, you know, you could drop every pass they throw to you, who knows?
Right.
And all of a sudden you're not worth half the money they're already paying you.
Right. I'm just wondering, like, how much of a difference it is, because if he has to pay into an insurance policy every month, what's that compared to, like, what they actually paid out to him?
That's a good question.
Like,
yeah,
is he really going to be all that comfortable? And especially if he did end up getting more money, it's like, well, then that would have just been a sunk cost to him.
Yeah,
you
right?
You know, he would have paid all this money for insurance policy.
So in a way, I feel like it's a smart thing, but it can also be, who knows, it could also be a huge pain in the rear end if that is the case for not only player, but for management and team. Because if that's just another, there's already enough distractions in the game of football, but for that to be another distraction for your team, if you're the guy coming in here saying, I've got this policy on me and I need this money or whatever. I just think that, again, it might be something that's not needed in a locker room, but I still think it's kind of smart for a player to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But let's go on to another quick story here before we head to break. I saw this headline yesterday, and LeBron James, now that he's moved to L.A. and all of that news is out of the way, I don't know if this was – it was in some interview, but he was asked if he regrets kind of anything involving his son or if he would do anything different. They got onto this whole discussion of family, and LeBron regrets putting the pressure on his son to carry his name. So LeBron's son is – obviously his name is LeBron James Jr., and he plays basketball at an AAU level, and LeBron's worried that now with his son carrying around his name, that going further into basketball, obviously into high school, getting to college, and then if he decides to go pro, what is his name going to do to his son's legacy? And you've seen that other places in sports. Obviously, Ken Griffey Jr. comes to mind because Ken Griffey Jr., both he and his father got the chance to play together,
mm-hmm.
which LeBron could have a chance to do too if LeBron plays for however many more years that would be, like, what, seven or eight more years, something like that, which he could. I mean, it's not out of the question. But what do you think that would – because like I said, we've seen it with Ken Griffey Jr., Larry Nance Jr. also, as he kind of exploded onto the scene with Cleveland last year, was discovered that his dad also played basketball. So I don't know. What do you guys think if about his son carrying around that name? Do you think – how what kind of effect do you think it would have on him in the game of basketball?
I mean – what does the son think is the real question. Like, is he proud to take his name? Because clearly he's not really going by LeBron James Jr. He's going by
Brony, I believe Brony is what Jr. they call him. Yeah. Yes, they call him Brony as a nickname.
So maybe
that's unfortunate with the whole, like, My Little Pony.
My Little Brony.
Yeah. Yeah. Brony.
All right, well, now there's the first, you know, diss on him. There you go.
Haley just ruined it.
But in terms of it, I mean, you're carrying around a legacy at the same time. So if you're already playing basketball and that's your dream to play basketball, might as well keep the name. But
and it's not like he's bad at it either. Like, if you go on YouTube, you can find clips of him. The dude's a beast. He's already grabbing rim at, what, I think he's like 10 or 11 years old, something like that.
Well, I mean, look where he came from.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. But I agree. I think that I don't think it's going to be an issue to escape the name.
And I really don't even think it's that, like, our problem to really talk about it. I think that he needs to approach his son and be like, hey, do you want me to change your name? Like, is this going to be a problem for
you? I'm not going to approach his son and try to talk him it's therapy.
But I'm just saying, like, in general, like, is it even right for us to talk about it? You know, like, it's not our problem. Like, if he feels bad about it and goes off to a media and, like, blah, 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 go ahead.
Loss of value thing isn't our problem either. We still talked about it.
Yeah, that's
get true. Over it, Sean. It's sports. This is the stuff we talk about.
Well, I think no matter what he would name his kid, like, if his son decided to go into basketball, he's going to be compared to him no matter what. He'll still have the last name James. That's kind of like Cam Newton's son Chosen. Like, Cam Newton was all like, oh, I don't want my son to have the pressure of being Cam Newton Jr. So then he named his son Chosen.
You are the chosen one.
Yeah, like, I think no matter what a professional athlete names his kids or
I kind of want to name my son Chosen now. At least give him, like, the middle name of Chosen.
You can pretty much name your kid anything, man. Like, literally, there's no law against what you can name your. Yeah, there you go. I agree. Like I said, I don't think it's going to be too much. I mean, if he didn't play basketball, let's say he played baseball.
Yeah.
They're still going to compare him to how he did in baseball to how his father did in basketball. You can't really escape that if you're going to be an athlete and your parents an athlete. I don't think it's the issue of escaping his name, though. I feel like whether you call him Brony or whether you call him LeBron James Jr., whatever you call him, if he's a good enough player and he's able to separate himself and create his own career, he can create his own name. It's always the pressure of making it out of the title. That label of so-and-so's son.
Yeah. Because
you can be as good of a player and you can put up all the stats you want and have your own career and people can talk about you like, oh yeah, LeBron James did this and LeBron James Jr. did this. But most of the time, how they're going to transition is, yeah, LeBron did this and then his son, LeBron James Jr., did this. Like, you can never really escape that son label.
You can't escape the shadow that your father put.
Exactly,
ever.
Yeah. You can make your own name, but you're always going to be stuck in that
just
shadow.
Just pray that you're better than your father in the end.
Yeah. Because
if you fail, then it's just going to be like, oh, well, LeBron James did this, but his son did this.
And also, like, you got to think what kind of social media does to a kid like that in this time.
Social media destroys lives. We already know that.
Yes, it does. As much as little bit of good as it does way more worse, but that's a conversation for a
different day.
But speaking about who did something bad, who's going to get away with it, we're going to talk Conor McGregor and his punishment coming up next on the Spencer Wilson Show here on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Spencer Wilson Show. It's time for My Two Spence Worth.
Welcome back in studio. Let's talk a little UFC. Primarily, let's talk a little Conor McGregor. Because if you don't remember, back in April, I think it was early April, the UFC was April 10th. The UFC was having a pay-per-view event in Brooklyn at the Barclays Center, and it was during a media day. And at the end of that media day, there obviously the loading docks area, there was a charter bus. Fighters were being led onto that bus, and at some point, Conor McGregor and I think it was like three or four members of his group or his posse, his entourage, basically stormed into the area. McGregor started kind of causing a scene, ended up grabbing a hand truck, like a dolly, basically picking it up and throwing it into the bus window, shattered the bus window, and ended up injuring a couple of the fighters that were supposed to be on that card. So you would think that, okay, you have a guy that's A, not even really in the UFC. He still hasn't had a fight for over 2 years in the UFC. July 16th, I believe 2016 was his last fight in the UFC. So he's kind of, honestly, in my opinion, irrelevant in the world of MMA. If he's been gone for 2 years and all he's done in that time is lose a boxing fight to a guy that's, I think, what, like 10 years older than he is. So that's all he's done in that time. He won a UFC fight in July 2016. He lost a boxing match to Floyd Mayweather, and then he threw a dolly into a bus. It's basically his timeline since he's had a fight in the UFC. And once this happened, Dana White came out and said, all right, he's done with us. We're not going to affiliate with him anymore. He's kind of just out of our hair. And now all of a sudden, we get to July. Conor McGregor goes to court, and he does a whole plea deal. And he has to, I think he pleads guilty to a disorderly conduct violation. That's it. So basically he had to pay the bus company, obviously, for the damages he caused to the bus. And he has to serve, I think it's 5 hours of community service.
5 days.
5 days, yeah, thank you, of community service, which he's already done. Yeah. So I don't think the punishment fits the crime, because Dana White's also made comments that McGregor could come back and immediately get a title shot against Khabib. I'm not going to try to pronounce his last name. But I don't understand that for a few reasons. One, Khabib was the whole target of that Barclays Center incident. So why would you go, okay, well, you couldn't get to him then, so we're just going to give you a fight against him now? That makes no sense at all. The two of the fighters that he actually injured in that whole circumstance, or whatever you want to call it, the whole charade, were in the lightweight division that Conor McGregor and Khabib compete in. So if anything, in my opinion, Conor should at least have to fight those two guys before he even gets close to a title. I mean, what precedent does this send, or does this give off, that you're going to allow a guy make a total fool out of your media day in a city like Brooklyn that's got a whole bunch of media attention on it? And not only is he going to be a nuisance and make a mockery of it, but now you're just going to kind of go from, oh, we're done with him too, he could just come back and get a title shot. He's 2 years out. He hasn't had a fight in 2 years. And by the time this fight happens, it's going to be closer to 2.5 years. So 2.5 years outside the octagon, doing nothing but having a boxing match and causing public incidences. And now he's just going to walk in and get a title shot. I honestly thought Dana White, being the guy that he is and being the president that he is, wasn't just going to let this happen. When he came out initially and said, Conor's done with us, I stood up clapping. So I was like, yeah, because when you have guys that are draws like this, because Conor McGregor will sell out any venue.
Yeah.
He has a following. I mean, like I said, he hasn't had a fight since July of 2 years ago, but even with that, he still has a very passionate following, especially in his home country of Ireland, and they'll sell out an arena on their own if they wanted to.
He's notorious.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, very good, Haley. Yeah. We just slipped that in there. So it's one of those instances where you have guys that are huge draws, and they have certain perks that they can get away with. This doesn't feel like it's one of those perks that he should just get away with. I appreciate that he went through the legal system and worked all the way out the way he should have. And everything I've heard and seen, he was very orderly through it all and was very cooperative and very polite and very just a good person throughout this whole thing, which is good to hear. But that doesn't excuse what he did. Yeah. So if you're Dana White and you say he's done with us, if you want to come back on that a little bit and let him back in, that's fine. I'm okay with that, because you know he's going to be a draw. But to just give him a chance to come back here and fight for a title, especially against a champion that, A, like I said, was the whole target of that attack at Barclays Center, and that he's come out and scrutinized several times, saying he's not good enough, he can't compete with me. Well, you didn't care if he could compete with you 2 years ago or even a year ago. In fact, you didn't care so much you went off and just fought Floyd Mayweather for some odd reason. You haven't even had another boxing fight since. If you're going to be a boxer, be a boxer. But don't have one throwaway main event fight and then go cause some stir. Oh, no, I'm just going to go back to the UFC. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And I really thought Dana White was going to say, if you want to come back, you're going to have to go through him, him, and him, and then we'll see how everything goes. We'll see how you handle those media events. We'll see how you handle those fights and how you handle everything after it. And then, if you've cleaned it up, if you're just back to the way it was when you were in the UFC and were selling out events right and left, then that's fine. But it seems ridiculous that he's going to cost fighters who are trying to make a living just like he is, he's going to cost them a chance to make money, because he did. Ray Borg and Michael Chiesa were the two fighters in the lightweight division that did not get to participate on that card because of this whole incident. And they're just lost. That money is gone. That opportunity to be on TV is gone. That opportunity to build your resume up is gone. And it doesn't seem like Conor is going to face any of those punishments for that. He goes through the legal system. That's fine. There should be something else, though, for UFC purposes that prevents him from just coming back and getting a title shot, because it doesn't seem right to me. It doesn't seem right that this guy can just be a nuisance, come back, and then just go, oh, sorry, yeah, look what I did. I served my service time. I'm good. No, you're not, because there are two people out there and a couple more that aren't in your division that lost out on money and a good paycheck. A pay-per-view paycheck is a nice paycheck, especially if you're on the main card, which I believe at least Chiesa was. I think Borg may have been on the main card as well. But the fact that he just gets to come in and say, oh, well, I did everything I needed to. Hey, Dana, can I get a title shot? Yeah, sure. It just seems outright ridiculous to me that he would get that kind of opportunity.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of athletes, you know, and I think it talks about in the NFL a lot, you know, they go off and they do horrible things, like they beat up their girlfriends or all sorts of stuff. And we just kind of keep forgiving athletes because they make a lot of money. You know, I think that's what the UFC and NFL and everything, they're like, oh, well, you make a lot of money.
If you win.
And we kind of slapped you on the wrist, yeah. But now we realize we can make more money off of you, so it's all right.
Exactly. If you win and you can bring in money, that's just the way it goes. Unfortunately, it's the way it goes. That's the show. Thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter at @MyTwoSpenceWorth.
You can follow me on Instagram at Haley Clemens, @HaleyIGH.
And we'll talk to you next week, everybody. Have a safe weekend. Peace.
ESPN Radio 94.5 FM, KUUB FM, Sun Valley, Reno.